On RSN 927's Racing Pulse, welcome to The Verdict.
How do you rate Prince of Sussex compared to some of the best two-year-olds we've seen at this point in time?
He could be the best. He could be the third or fifth
best.
Could
be the best, you think?
The rest are even. They've been shopping the results around. A wet track on pace winner won the Golden Slipper, whose name I bet you we've already forgotten.
The Amici.
Yeah.
Oh, just you didn't forget. There wasn't a standout in the super-duper two-year-old races, and why can't something rapidly emerge?
I mean, I like handicap racing. I think there's way too many set weights, weight for age races. I'd much rather see 98% of the program as handicap events because it gives everyone a chance. I actually just like seeing big fields and competitive racing.
My mail is Peter Blandis is having conversations with the creator of the Jericho Cup to try and get something happening up there.
Needs must when the devil drives.
Yeah, there we go. We will talk.
As we always say.
Good morning. It is time for The Verdict once again as we look back on a huge weekend and week of racing and racing issues, not just here in Australia, but all around the world. And two of the brightest minds to do that have joined us in the studio. Mickey Lynch, who is the racing editor for The Age. How are you, Mickey?
I'm very fine. I should sort of correct you on that because we have now got an estimable character called Michael Cox.
Oh, you've been demoted?
No, I haven't been demoted. I haven't been demoted, but Michael has essentially taken the job that Patrick Bartley once used to have, and there was a sort of hiatus for a year. And Michael joined us. He'd worked in Hong Kong, and people in the industry would
absolutely
have seen him around the traps at the track in the last few weeks. So Michael's kind of, you know, going to a lot of the race meetings in this last few weeks. But I'm still there, and I'm still punching around, certainly on the interesting days.
You're the number one man for us, Lynchy. Michael did write a few interesting articles over the weekend, actually. On a topic that, Matty, you have also discussed and we are going to talk about on The Verdict, about the number of Group 1 races and Group Enlisted races in Australia and the quality and depth of them. Winning weekend, losing weekend for you?
Rollercoaster weekend, as per usual. It drifted into Casterton yesterday where there was a couple of saviours and a couple of that beautifully named Twin Rivers, Two Rivers Steeplechase. I was on the thing that led, meandering for about 7 or 8 minutes and then got dived at late and got blouse. So,
yes.
Pentamatic. I'm down in the end.
Interesting weekend in racing, but an interesting weekend in Australian politics as well. We all were outsider got up there. What about the punter who had $1 million on Labor at around about $1.16? And then we had Sportsbet also pay out, I think, about
$5
million.
$3 million or something, yeah.
In a two-horse race.
Unbelievable. But I'm with Michael Cox on that subject that you mentioned at the top of too many Group 1 races, and I know we're going to get into it, and I think a couple of races on the weekend highlighted it, and a couple of the big races coming up in Brisbane will continue to highlight.
Absolutely. Michael and I had quite a long chat about this in the office on Friday, just about way too many black type, listed, group 1, just cheap kind of currency, I think, in this country. There's just, I think I read somewhere once there are more Group 1s in Australia than there are in England, France and Ireland combined. Now, you might argue,
Australia's got 74 Group 1s,
yeah.
And I did actually ask Nick Egan, who is one of racing's leading statisticians, and he said he thinks that there's around 78 in the entirety of Europe. So
yeah,
we have 74 in Australia, and there could be about 78.
Yeah, and
I think the US has just over 100, which when you think of the US population versus the Australian horse and human population, it's ridiculous.
Well, in Europe, I mean, people will say, oh, Australia's the size of Europe. It might be. People may say there are more horses in Australia than Europe, but I don't know what the demographics of the population are. But it just does seem to me that it's spread a lot thinner here than it would be if you took England, Ireland and France as separate jurisdictions.
And I think it distorts our recognition when it comes to official race and horse rankings as well. Like, we seem to be overly represented. Take out Winx, but some of the races that Winx won, where her opposition was lesser, you take Winx out and then you're suddenly left with this landscape we're looking at now. And I thought our races and our horses were overly represented at the top of those equine and race rankings around the world. Well, we had four or five races that ranked in the top 20 or something. I mean, how the hell is that possible with the sort of horses we're dealing
with? Well, Winx was the one that obviously...
You can't rate a race on the winner. You rate the winner, not the race, don't
you? Yeah, but, well, I don't know. It seems to me that's the way they do it. They take the winner's rating and performance into account. Now, this is not to say that all these races in England, Ireland and France are super duper.
Well, you saw
either.
One on the weekend that you said Winx would win by 30
The Lockinge.
Yeah, we had the... Well, we... I mean, they had the Group 1 Lockinge
Stakes. And last year's Lockinge was bad as well, wasn't it?
Well, that was won by Rhododendron, who was from the Coolmore stable. This time round, it was a Group 1 over a mile. The first, I think, open age Group 1 mile race of the season. 17 or 18 runner field, big field, which tells you a story, doesn't it, in these weight for age races, if you're getting a huge field. And it was won by a horse called Mustachery, a six-year-old, I think he's a gelding.
Sir Michael Stout.
And Sir Michael Stout trained. But Mustachery had never been a Group 1 type rated performer before. So that doesn't mean to say all their Group 1s are super duper quality. Yeah, I looked at that. I thought Winx would have given these a furlong start and beaten most of them. You know, he's won it from a good mare. Lorenz is a good filly, but, you know, Winx would give her weight and beat her.
So what's the solution, and will it ever change? Because it seems to be a self-fulfilling prophecy to have group races and Group 1 races, because the breeders definitely don't want less black type
and
less
they are
group
very
races.
Influential.
The owners don't want less group or listed races, and neither do the trainers. So how or will it ever be changed?
Well, it has to be taken out of their decision-making area, doesn't it? And that's what administrators are for. That's what racing administrators are for, to be isolated from those groups as best you can.
Yeah.
I just think you've got to... You have to assess it in a way where it's a fair representation of the quality of your racing.
Definitely need what in political terms would be called the separation of church and state. You know, you need the administrators with an overarching responsibility to be immune from the lobbying of breeders. And the breeding dog does wag the racing tail, well, quite obviously, doesn't
it? In theory,
it?
The Patent Committee in Racing Australia is your starting point.
Well, that is right. And look, Greg Nicholls is the chair of that. I know Greg Carpenter, I don't believe, is... I think he's an advisor. He's either on the board, and Greg's on a European vacation at the moment. So we'll speak to him about this when he gets back. But it's an interesting one. And I know you've spoken to Dan O'Sullivan about how he thought the Goodwood and also the Doomben Cup rated on the weekend, and how recent group races have been rating up to a certain mark, I suppose, of where we would think Group 1 races should
rate. Look, I mean, I think there are some races through history and tradition should still carry a Group 1 moniker, but I don't think there are very many of them.
Well, and it's hard to protect them. My attitude, one of the byproducts of the Everest is that, and as much as it's got its positive points, right, but if you invent a $13 million race to be run in October, and then the short history of the Everest is that slot holders are waiting longer and longer and longer. An early commitment for a slot horse has been flawed, so they wait and wait and wait. So the trainers of these horses, everyone wants to win the Everest now, so they campaign their horses
can
later.
Can you blame them?
They campaign their horses to get into the Everest, and that doesn't mean winning a Goodwood or winning a Doomben 10,000 or a Stradbroke, because those horses are not going to be attracting slot holders now and in the future, because the early grabs from slot holders have failed. So they wait for the horses. Remember Osborne Bulls at the Death Knock and all those sort of horses? So... Well, I think a consequence of the Everest is that it tinkers with the flow of things that include the Goodwood and the Stradbroke.
Yeah, I suppose the All-Star Mile will do the same thing to a lesser extent.
Well, Osborne Bulls and Nature Strip are out of the rest of the Brisbane Carnival, partly because of the Everest. Not because of anything else.
We've got another Group 1 this Saturday, the Kingsford Smith, I think it is, isn't it? And we're going to have Dubious, who's going to be a red-hot chance, and it's a great... opportunity for the owners and the trainer, Kira Ma and also Dave Eustace, to throw it in the two-year-old when it's only got 48 kilos and Nikita Berryman's going to ride, because it will be, from what we would, I suppose, normally recognise, a substandard Group 1 sprint field.
But aren't our sprinters, this is my continual argument, and I don't want to sound like Mr. Negative all the time, but our sprinters are not what we think they are. Our push to the rest of the world is we look at the results of Royal Ascot and we say, we've got endless depth of sprinters, we haven't got stayers, and year in, year out, we're going to beat you because our sprinters are this wave of classy, fast horses. But look what's going on now. We've got all these big sprint races and not enough good horses to fill them.
No, that's true. The one thing that would be difficult to reconcile is to take Group 1 races away from the states that so desperately need a pinnacle race, isn't it? Like a South Australia or a Queensland, because that's where they are struggling the most.
I think they've been kicked so much in Adelaide, they can't. Another one might be fatal if they were to take the Sangster or the Goodwood. And the Goodwood is a great...
Still worth 700 grand.
The Goodwood
is
the sort of race, though, that I think should be a Group 1 race. It's sanctioned by history and tradition. It's the pinnacle of South Australian racing. But it's handicapped because, as you say, there are too many other options, you know, and most owners... How many trainers do we now hear all the time in post-race interviews, and we probably didn't hear it anything like it 10 or 15 years ago, they even run a place in a listed race. They'll go, oh, well, we've done our job with a filly. Oh, she's got black type. Mm. That's what they all say now. You used to hear them say that 10 years ago?
Now it's all a desperate grab to bomb for third in a cheap listed race worth an extra 500 grand at stud.
Lynchy, Hats Aikens just tweeted, Australia's got the best part of 19,000 races. How many in Europe would you estimate?
I've no idea. I mean, I haven't lived there for 30-odd years, but I do see they do have 6-7 meetings often in the summer in England alone with night meetings, plus then you've got one or two in France most days, two or three perhaps. Ireland has a lot less racing. Ireland would usually have one, maybe two a day. But unless I was able to take 10 minutes out of this show now and search it.
Be more than 19,000.
I've no idea. I don't want to guess.
Maddie, let's talk about the Goodwood. Dispatch, I mean, great trading performance. Well done to Todd Pennell. We were hoping to have a chat to, but I think he's still on a bender. And so he should be. His first Group 1 win. We haven't been able to raise him this morning.
In his defence, the correct weight guy, I spoke to him yesterday, he seemed reasonably okay.
Todd Pennell, okay, all right, well, that's good to know. Maybe. Good on you, Todd, wherever you are, anyway. And well done, Tony Macker, his first Group 1. We spoke to him on Friday, I think Greg spoke to him on Saturday. He was going for the stable mate, Cool Passion, when it missed the start. How did you see the race overall, the Goodwood?
Train wreck on paper and a train wreck in the running.
Punting.
It was a bad Group 1. It wasn't a proper Group 1.
Train wreck for me because I backed a $71 chance each way, and of course it was beaten in a photo for third.
And then they just sat up, and it was just...
It was a slowly run Goodwood.
Yeah, the great Goodwoods have been spread out late, and I remember when Keeper won it.
It was a fantastic race last year when Santa Ana Lane gave everything, you know, a 10-length start with about 150 metres to go and weaved his way through under Ben Mellum. So sometimes those messy races can deliver brilliantly spectacular outcomes.
Yeah. I was with a mate of mine yesterday who's a bit of a fringe punter, Macca, and he said, oh, what about that behemoth in the Goodwood, didn't he? You know, he's an ear star. And I said, well, he did look eye-catching, mate, but it was more of a reflection of the weakness of the race that a nice up-and-coming horse like him and Dispatch were
still
able
finished
to...
in front of a Group 1 winner, Sprite, who had a similar sort of run on the rails.
Yeah. It was a debacle at the start, which no one's fault, with Sprite springing a plate, say that three times. and we had about a 15-minute delay. Now, I wonder how much that affected. I saw Craig Williams say that Iconoclasm just melted a few of the others with that delay there as well. And interesting how Ollie wanted to stick to the fence, because a lot of people were saying that you couldn't make ground, whether it was tempo-related or the way the track was at Morphettville on Saturday. So I wonder whether that delay ruined the chances of many in that Group 1 as well.
Did it map as a fast race? Like, it's all very well for us in retrospect to say, oh, they crawled and all that, but did it map quick? I'm not sure. I mean, I can't quite recall whether it did or didn't, but I know Cool Passion was and Dispatch were two who were going to go forward, but maybe we erred in not reading that it was going to be slowly run anyway, you know?
Well, you can also, though, be a bit generous and say the winner had won its last three on the spin and is perhaps in improving type, you know.
But he would have been a Goodwood winner in the old handicap days. They made it set weight penalties to attract the takeover targets and black caviars, which they did, but they weren't
Actually, looking at the weight spread here, I've got the field in front of me. It's a 3.5 kilo.
It's spread. A quasi handicap.
It's actually better than some nominal handicaps that don't have a 3.5 kilo.
Well, it's designed these days
spread.
To attract the better horses.
It is, and you know the better horses were at the top of the weights. The mares, Booker and Sprite, weren't they? You know, at the top.
Well, only two Group 1 winners in the race, and they were the two up the top.
There was a bit of activity on social media.
Well, Dom Tanua, yeah. Yesterday I'll read out this tweet. It was an interesting one from Dom, who rode at Morpheville on Saturday, saying the tempo in most races yesterday, as in Saturday, was a farce, considering it's one of the biggest race days of the year. More needs to be done, in my opinion, against slowing tempo to allow all horses, including backmarkers, their chance, and the safety factor of riders clipping heels becomes more of a danger. Now, that is from Dom Tanua, who's a Group 1 winning jockey, and he got a lot of feedback on social media. I think Mike Simon's even chipped in saying, well, you're a jockey, do something about it. He clarified and said, look, if you throw back the fence, you can't actually increase the tempo of a race. So, interesting, and I reckon it's great that a jockey puts that out there publicly. We want to have a chat to him today, but he's got child duties at school this morning. We'll have a chat to him during the week, but I don't think there's any kickback whatsoever. I think good on Dom for having a say and putting his opinion out there.
Well, Lynchy, this comes back to the history of Australian racing, of modern Australian racing. We sit up and sprint and we don't run fast and we don't build speed. And in England, they have pacemakers to ensure it. This is a consequence of the racing we have, you know?
Yeah, well, it seems to be. You've grown up your whole life here. I've only been watching it 30 years, but it does seem to be that that's the way. You know, you just mentioned in Europe, they allow pacemakers. Should that be introduced here? Because it's not allowed, is it? If we had pacemakers, would they run at a truer
shouldn't
race?
Need a pacemaker or in a 1200 meter sprint?
Well, you shouldn't. No, you shouldn't. But in general terms, what Matt's point is that certainly races a mile and above often are run at a crawler.
Well, and they produce truer Group 1 winners, don't they? You run at a true gallop, you get the truest winner.
Well,
and
Gay Waterhouse worked this out a long time ago. Aren't all her horses rock hard fit and just trained to go from the front? And they do, you know. And look at that great miler in Hong Kong. He's never going to run into trouble. Beauty Generation, is he?
Because he would have if they'd been game enough to go to Japan.
He makes his own luck by making a pace and running in front.
See, Felgate's very sensitive to these things. I said, I'll run the headline by him. He sat there and he went,
Bubble Boy?
Okay, let it go.
No, he calls Beauty Generation Bubble Boy.
Because he lives in the bubble in
Correct,
Hong Kong.
Yes, yes.
Well, it's a pretty tough bubble, though, Matt, you know, there's some pretty good
running against the same horses.
You didn't bring that. I know,
yeah,
he really.
They do that. Winch did that. She ran against the same half dozen stablemates many times.
I enjoyed your chat with Anthony Cummings last week, but Bumble Boy wasn't mentioned during that conversation.
I did try and get out of him. did he wonder why if that horse would ever become the world's top rated horse? And he stuck up for him. So I was hoping he'd say no. He's been running against goldfish in a fishbowl.
It is interesting though how many, you know, become so much highly rated. Like, didn't Lloyd sell one from here? And
Vengeance
it became
of
Vengeance.
Rain.
It was called Subscribe, wasn't it? And then became Vengeance of Rain. And at a time was the world's highest rated horse, wasn't it?
SMSs coming through. The Goodwood was ruined by the delay, which was compounded by waiting for a benchmark race in Sydney. Questions need to be asked why this happened.
Tony McAvoy was so angry about that he mentioned it in his acceptance interview, you know. So that was front of mind.
The delay,
that's again about showcasing your best races.
The Derby delayed last year by problems behind the barrier as well, or there was another big meet
in South Australia?
Yeah.
I wonder what would have happened if the shoe was on the other foot, if the major Group 1 race or the Everest was running 10 minutes late in Sydney. Would they have waited for South Australia, for Morpheville to run a race? I doubt it. I think it's a little bit to do with where the power base lies in Australian racing. And also, I think what the protocol is of Sky Racing, that is if the meeting is running late, the race that is on time is meant to get precedence on their platform.
Can I just make a quick comment about that too? I hate that mentality. It's like you're almost like you're punishing the club who can't get its act together on time, but it's not their fault. It's never their fault. It's always a
point. They do tend to be tardy in Adelaide.
But you're penalising the viewer and the punter. You're not
100%.
You know, why punish them for the inadequacies in inverted commas?
Well, we had the situation which was, again, no one's fault, and I think Racing.com played it as well as they possibly could have, because they had the race, I can't remember where the provincial venue was on Saturday, but they had to leave the horses behind the barriers to put that Country Victorian race in, and then we didn't get a mounting yard for the last race here at Flemington. So it was just a very busy, unfortunate situation there. Let's talk about the racing up north. Actually, you know what? Let's take a break. We'll come back, look at the Doomben Cup, because I want to ask you about John Allen, who is riding in unbelievable form. The performance of Kieran Maher, Dave Eustace and Kennedna. Could she be a Cox Plate contender?
The Verdict on RSN 927's Racing Pulse.
Jim Song is starting to close. Kennedna driving to the rail. Tally, Lover Lover run on. Archidemus in front. Kennedna up on the inside. Challenges. Jim Song next. Kennedna took a break. Lifeless Ordinary flying. So was 60's Groove. But it's Kennedna's Cup. Kennedna won the Cup. Beat home Lifeless Ordinary. 60's Groove.
Another Group 1 win to Kennedna. Also Johnny Allen and the training partnership of Kirima and Dave Eustace, who are having a winter carnival to remember up north. Kennedna now, with that win, is taking her prize money to the brink of $2 million. She is a dual Group 1 winner, and she is now a very, very valuable broodmare. But once again, what do we think about the depth of the Doomben Cup? Before we get to that, though, what about the ride of John Allen? It was absolutely sensational. I know he's copped a suspension, but the way he weaved through there, and John Allen, I think, has won now 6 Group 1s in his career, 4 in the last 6 months.
Which is incredible, given who hasn't been there.
Well, exactly right. Mm. But what he is able to do over the jumps...
It took you a while to jump
and
on
it. Over the flat. Is there an argument to be made that he is the most talented all-round jockey in Australia?
Well, certainly on the evidence of what we see before us, you'd have to make that argument. There may well be a handful of top, maybe heavier-weighted flat riders who don't ride over jumps, who would be of the same all-round ability. I'm thinking, you know, Huey Bowman always used to say it was an ambition of his when he was on holiday over in Ireland to ride in a jumps race. So you'd have to think if Huey Bowman decided to take up jumps racing, he'd be pretty handy like Johnny Allen as well. But we see it's not just John. I mean, you know, Clayton Douglas had weight problems and rode over jumps and has now got his weight down and is riding very well on the flat. Jamie Mott, another heavyweight flat rider, has mixed flat and jumps racing with great success. And overseas, Jim Crowley, the champion flat jockey, and Sheikh Hamdan's retained jockey on the flat now. He was a National Hunt rider. Graham Lee, who won an Ascot Gold Cup on trip to Paris that came out here and ran placed in the cups. He won a Grand National. Timmy Murphy was the same. We have jockey Vincent Chemineau in France, I think, who rides a lot of good Group 1 winners on the flat. He was a jump jockey originally. So it seems to be a trend. I mean, particularly now with the weight scale going higher and higher, these jumping riders who maybe could just about do 9.5 stone, what's that, you know, 61 kilos, couldn't get a go on the flat before, but with the weight scales going up, they can now ride on the flat. And maybe a lot of them are guys who've been horsemen from a very young age. They grew up with pony clubs and show jumping and things like that. And maybe that sort of horsemanship comes to the fore.
Well, Weary always said that the best horseman he's ever come across was John Allen. And I reckon there's almost hardship in the genes of the great Irish jockeys, isn't it? They grow up hard, don't they? And they're almost born on the back of a horse. I remember talking to John Allen. He said, I could basically ride before I could walk.
Yeah, and well, his mum was, a show jumping instructor or a pony instructor.
Yeah.
And he grew up, a lot of them grew up in rural areas. Back in the day, you know, every farmer had a horse or two. I mean, even my dad, you know, told me they used to just find ponies out across the Curra or in fields and they'd all go out and just ride them bareback, you know, yeah. Like that was the 1940s.
Your dad used to do that?
Oh, my dad, his brothers, they all went I mean, they all went into racing stables as apprentices. None of them made it because they all got a bit too heavy. But yeah, that was the day back in Ireland.
And then Lynchy came along to save the day. And, but it's his work ethic, Michael. You know, he went to Bendigo.
Well, he
rode
a treble yesterday.
Well, I don't. And it sounds a little bit weird to say, but that hardship in the genes. But there was something about the toughness of the Irish horseman. And John Allen wouldn't think twice about it. I remember a few times when he's ridden Group 1s, mate, you feel those derbies in Adelaide, Lynchy, where I've spoken to him the next day or day after, and I said, oh, what'd you do last night? No, back on the plane, up in the morning, off we go.
Volatile mix. And
that
and
was more clear than his own accent.
What was that? Hey, just on Jayana, though, like, I think because Weary gave him so much of a head start, I think maybe a few punters and people might have looked at him and said, okay, well, he's still maybe in that Group 1 category, a second-tier jockey compared to the likes of Hugh Bowman, Kieran McAvoy, J-Mac. But I don't think that anymore now. I think if you like a horse in a Group 1 and John Allen's on his back up against those jockeys, you wouldn't have any second thoughts or reservations, would you?
No. And I think there's a few now. Like Jamie Carr, I was watching her again on Adelaide on Saturday, and, you know, it doesn't... You know, you shouldn't have to say this, but there is no distinction now. You know, with so many of these jockeys, like I'd be as happy to have Jamie Carr, John Allen, maybe more Jamie Carr for me, or than as a Hugh Bowman or a Kieran McAvoy for sure.
Well, obviously, you know, jockeys improve, and let's not forget John Allen is probably improving because he didn't ride on the flat very much until about 3 or 4 years ago. So, as he rides more and more and he rides better and better horses, he will, I think, continue to probably... It's going to be incremental because he's obviously at a pretty high level now.
He's a great swooper.
Well, he's powerful and strong, isn't he? And he gets stuck into them, you know, if he has to. You know, and I just think, I mean, Weary used to say, didn't he, that if he could have done 55 kilos or 54, he'd have put him up on everything.
Just an update too from... Darren Weir, ex-trained horses, 5 Group 1s now, 2 to Very Elegant, 2 to Kinedna, and the other one is, I will look that up right now.
It goes to show that other trainers...
One of Chris Weller horse, wasn't it?
Of course, Nature Strip. Yeah. But they're all, none of them's lost a leg, have they? As what there had been some fear. An SMS coming through asking, what's the latest with the Darren Weir situation? Well, we've heard no more. He's got his 4-year disqualification as... For the police investigation, it's been absolutely silent. What we do know, though, on Wednesday is that the next leg of the Jared McLean situation occurs because he faces the RAD board on Wednesday.
Exactly, he does, and I'll be there and reporting on that. Another interesting little twist there. I spoke to a Warrnambool trainer during the week. Sign yet of Lindsay Smith moving into those boxes, and I'll check with Jamie Steer later on about whether there's been a late complication or anything. There's no...
We spoke to him and he was down there. He had his first day at the Bull a couple of weeks ago.
Well, I spoke to a Warrnambool trainer 2 or 3 days ago saying there's no movement at those stables. So anyway, we'll see what happens.
Could I just revert back briefly to the topic we were discussing about too many Group 1s? Because Daryl Shearer, a colleague who we all know, has just emailed me through some data from the IFHA handbook, which I think is the International Federation of Horse Racing Associations, which gives a percentage of best races table for races in the 2016-17 Southern Hemisphere and 2017 racing year. Just interestingly, it suggests that Australia had, as you said, Michael, 19,145 races, of which 72 in that year were Group 1, so 0.4. Great Britain had just 6,400 races, according to this data, of which 0.6 were Group 1 races. Ireland, only 1,172 races, of which 1% were Group 1s. And France had 4,500-odd, of which 0.5% were Group 1s. So Australia, on a percentage basis, is actually got fewer Group 1s, but the sample size is massively more. I mean, Australia would appear to have a third more races than England, France and Ireland put together, according to the data from
It's interesting. And when we spoke to Andrew Noblet earlier, he did say, you know, it can be cyclical and you can have good years, you can have bad years. Where do we rate Kennedy? Like, God, you'd love to own her. But I still can't get it in my head that she is a genuine Group 1 mare, even though now she's won two Group 1s and almost $2 million.
Well, the post-Winx era has a lot of owners having ambitious thoughts, and I know that they've suggested why not throw their hat in the ring of a Cox Plate. And
She's entitled to.
Yeah, I think so. The Cox Plate's got to have 20-to-1 chances, doesn't it? You know, and sometimes they do a pinker-pinker. So.
Tell you what will be interesting, though. Will the committee exercise its discretion?
And, well, she's a dual Group 1 winner, and we're 6 months out. So.
Well, yeah, we are. I don't think it's
an imminent decision.
It's not imminent. It's no guarantee, because the old case of Coal Diesel always gets thrown up, doesn't it? Although that was 30 years ago. You'd have to say it wasn't exactly the strongest Group 1 field, though, was it? The Doomben Cup?
It was a disappointing addition. There is no doubt about that. Zeus Style, impressive on Saturday. Gee, I hope they have a crack at the Stradbroke. It'll be very interesting to see how he levels up.
Yeah, with the extra pressure and the distance and all that sort of stuff. But he's going to be the beneficiary. Every second year, there used to be a great, well-weighted horse, Undue. The Darwin horse was the one who, due to the weird situation in Brisbane Racing, I think it had won the BTC Cup, but still hadn't risen up the ballot for the Stradbroke, and it got in at the last minute. Tony Noonan, I think Hortensia was in a similar situation one year. Possibly. So I'm assuming that Zeus Style is in, the ballot.
It's your contention, of course, that the Stradbroke will be a much weaker race this year because of, you know, the way the pattern, well, not the pattern, but the programme is now developing.
Well, yeah, I just think it may be a half a glitch here, as Andrew Noblett said, but, you know.
I think we have to make the distinction, I mean, about quality as opposed to spectacle. That doesn't mean the Doomben Cup was fantastic spectacle. 18-runner field, you know, or 16 runners and, you know, swoopers finishing. Great, great race to watch.
Absolutely. Most punters won't notice what we're talking about. Right. They just love an exciting race. Yeah.
It's important not to throw that baby out with the bathwater.
Got a lot on the agenda that I want to get through, including, I have a Hall of Fame discussion. All the inductees, absolutely worthy inductees, but the timing of some of the inductions and those who are still sitting on the sidelines is intriguing. But just quickly before we get there, out of Flemington on Saturday, Be Good to Your Mother. Gee, he's a promising horse. I know he's in restricted races, but good to see Dan Bowman with a very, very nice horse. And he said on Friday that a race like the Rupert Clark is something long-term in the spring that they are aiming towards.
It was a big win, because if you look at it closely, nothing went right in the rung. He was always out of his rhythm and crowded. And halfway through the race, because I had him one out in the early quarter, that was when my roller coaster hit a peak. And God bless that first four in the Doomben Cup. A little small percentage. However, I thought I was going to dip on my roller coaster halfway through that race at Flemington, because it was just all not going to script, was it? It looked ugly. And then when he got out, he was still able to finish off. Didn't beat much, but I just reckon there was something about the win.
Interesting comments by Declan Bates, the jockey, who I think may also be another one who's ridden over jumps early on in his life and has got his weight down and shown a benefit. He said he gave him a few, and obviously not worried about his handicap mark to win by 6.5 lengths, but he wanted to teach him to race under pressure and give him a couple of clips with a whip, just so that when he does get up into better company, he does understand what it's about. Very promising looker, isn't he?
And just on Flemington, one of the other things that I had in the back of my mind was he drew in around the 1,400-metre circuit. There were five 1,400-metre races at Flemington on Saturday, which is a lot around...
Why?
I don't know, just the way it fell. But my observation of a couple of weeks ago, which I'm standing by, is when the rails back in at Flemington, particularly around the 1,400, it lends itself to fairer, less cluttered racing. When the rail's out a long way, you tend to get traffic. And it wasn't because there was a lot of apprentices riding that day. It was because when the rail's out over the 1,400 of Flemington, it can be high traffic. Take the rail back in and things loosen up.
No, I don't disagree with you there. It's common sense. The more space you've got, the more room there is. Just quickly, too, before we move on, we forgot to mention that Dispatch, they are planning. He's just landed in Melbourne today, and they are planning to take him up for the Stradbroke. How would we compare the form lines of the Goodwood heading into the Stradbroke?
Well, they're both weak, so... I think he'll find his... I think he'll meet his measure, because you know what happens in Queensland? They go quicker. They always go quicker. So he'll get pressured.
Let's talk about, before we take a break, and we're going to head over to the States to talk about this potential match race or group race with up to $35 to $40 million on the table. Hall of Fame. Gee, it seems to be further slipping out of our consciousness in racing, maybe because it was held in Queensland, but there didn't seem to be much of a build-up. They released the inductees on a Tuesday. It's held on a Friday night. We don't get any live coverage. I know Sky did a highlights coverage of it, but it's in any other sport, it's the pinnacle of what you can achieve as a participant to get into the Hall of Fame, and ours seems to be given very little public recognition. And this year, I was a bit confused about some of the inductees. Hugh Bowman, every day of the week, is a Hall of Fame jockey. But should he get in now while he's still currently riding, and you've got someone like Darren Gauchy still sitting on the sidelines?
I reckon it's got a very big identity and criteria crisis, the Hall of Fame. It should be massive, shouldn't it? When you think of something like a Hall of Fame, it should be one of the biggest things you have historically in your sport, updated every year. And it floats around the countryside. No one knows it's on. The invitation list, I know there was a few people a little bit gripey about. They were significant attachments to certain horses and they didn't naturally get an invitation and so all those sorts of things. But I think the first thing is, unless there's a very compelling case, I think it has to be a retrospective on your career. I mean, I know trainers train forever, so it's harder.
Trainers are different, I think, to
but
a jockey.
But with jockeys, I think it should be more a reflection on the career of a jockey who's no longer riding. And we're getting all these current jockeys in. Who's to say there won't be a scandal or an awkward situation like a Darren Weir thing in the training ranks? It's more likely with jockeys because they're still riding. And I struggle with the Darren Gauchy situation. He's retired, so he fits the retrospective category. He was our greatest ever rock star jockey. He was more famous than any jockey, I think, in Australian history, bar one or two, for bursting out of the bubble. He rode 35 Group 1 winners. He was inspirational. He came back from falls. He now works with younger jockeys. You cannot tell me that there have been 47 jockeys in history who are more entitled to be in the Hall of Fame than Darren Gauchy.
I think you make a very compelling case there, Matt, and I don't think anyone listening to this show is going to disagree with you over the gout. I would agree with you pretty much all the way, except maybe on the current riders. Most jockeys say start their careers at, 15, 16? So maybe we have a cut-off. We say if you've been riding for 20 years and you've been at the top, say, for 15 of those 20 years and your performances continue to merit it, maybe then you can become eligible. That doesn't mean you're going to be elevated to the Hall of Fame.
Oh, I don't disagree with that.
But you can become eligible maybe after, say, 20 years. As to how we fix it, I just find it very interesting. I think probably it would need a big free-to-air TV network to get behind it, because that's where you get the big eyeballs, not on streaming
systems. Well, I don't know what the politics is, because it seems to be a Sky broadcast, a Sky run situation.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we've got racing.com, which is free-to-air nationally.
No, it's not the same as like one of the major free-to-air networks.
Lynch, you're not going to get that.
Well, probably
not. You're not going to get a free-to-air.
Probably
go, yes, we will pay money to broadcast.
Well, maybe the industry could pay the free-to-air.
But it's ratings-wise.
To get the broadcast. But you're probably right there, and you obviously have a much greater experience and knowledge of TV than I do. Doesn't it seem to be the same, though, like Aussie Rules? I mean, Hall of Fame in Aussie Rules is not really a big deal either,
is that
it?
Part of a bigger night, the Hall of Fame, or is it a standalone night?
No, the Hall of Fame is a standalone night.
But people don't sort of bang on about it. It's not like top of consciousness.
In the week of it, there's a lot of
media coverage. But it's not like the Brownlow. You know, people talk about the Brownlow.
Maybe I overstated it. Maybe people don't get into the Hall of Fame.
Maybe in America they do, where they sort of market these things really well, and there are fantastic museums, you know, the Baseball Hall of Fame Museum and things like that. We don't really have the same thing in racing so much, do we?
No, and it was a late starter, so they've been playing catch up to try and induct a lot of people in the early years. But I think it's lost a lot of luster than what it did have 5 to 10 years ago. It used to be a huge production, a huge amount of money put into it. So, anyway, thoughts to ponder, and we'll have a chat to a few people who are involved in that. I know Brian Martin was instrumental in the instigation.
Yes,
of the
Hall he was. Of Fame. I don't think he's connected to it anymore. Just quickly before you go to the break, Michael, just because I know we're going to have a really good chat to Pat Cummins about the American thing, but I just wanted to squeeze in a quick one observation about Cassidon yesterday.
Gee, it looked good, that the steeple.
Yeah, and I'll put a story up online where just talking about the resurgence of jumps racing and how I think it's had to shrink to grow. And by shrink, I mean be placed in a certain area where it's most appreciated and most welcome, and that's out west. Like, the natural hedges of Casterton made it look and feel like it belonged yesterday, you know, and it was a great response to it. Cold Rain has a certain attraction as well, with an with historical attachment to jumps racing, and its jumps course in Warrnambool. So my observation was that it was fantastic, and I think Rick McIntosh was responsible for the two rivers. So there's two rivers that meet at Casterton, and the jumps course tracked the two rivers a bit too. So there's something beautiful about the way it all played out. But I reckon, because Bendigo's no longer host jumps racing because of the incidents last year around that tight course, whether they need to keep this evolution going, where it's basically held in the west, where jumps racing is essentially held in the west, where it's at its best.
I'm probably coming around to agree much more with what you're saying there. I mean, I used to think the showcase races probably should be held in town, but they don't get much traction. They don't pull many crowds. They don't get an awful lot of media. So maybe that's the way to go. Concentrated in the west, Ballarat is going to be the home of the national Grand National.
Most of the trials are at Cranbourne, though. I think that has to shift.
But there also has to be a track in the east, I think, as well. I don't know which one would be the appropriate one for jumps in the east.
We still have a jumps racing at Sandown now. How long that will be, I don't know. Maddie had an interesting article last week about Sandown and what's going on there as well. But I've come around to your way of thinking, Maddie. I was totally against this, saying that no, we need the jumps racing in some form in the metropolitan area for, I suppose, the status, the eyeballs, but.
No, I'm with you now.
It's such a better spectacle when it is on one of these dedicated country circuits. You get the passionate jumps racing people out there. It's better racing. I'm with you. I think that could be the way of the future, and to build it up massively moving forward, because it was such a beautiful race to watch, those live hedges at Casterton.
And you know what? He's living proof you can teach an old dog new tricks, because you were one of the advocates who were calling for it to be ended about a decade ago.
Yeah, but a decade ago, there were horses dying left, right and centre. It was a pretty good argument at the time, Lynchy.
The verdict. There's more to come after this. We're going stateside now.
Opinions. Everyone's got one. On RSN 927's The Verdict.
Welcome back to The Verdict. Keep your SMSs coming in. 0416 90 50 52. Maddie, you've just received a message just on the Hall of Fame. And tell us who you think should be inducted as well.
Yeah. SMSs through. And I got from a fan of Greg Hall's, basically saying, why isn't Greg Hall in there? And I know everyone says, well, they'll get their time, and that's a good argument. But Greg Hall was, wow, you know, he was the McDittman, wasn't he, you know?
Absolutely, and one of the true characters of racing as well. We're going to head over to the States now, and it's great to have a chat to Pat Cummins once again, because he's been front and centre. He explained the controversy surrounding the Kentucky Derby when Maximum Security was disqualified. Well, the second leg of the Triple Crown was held yesterday, and it has had another layer of intrigue with the winner, an impressive winner, coming through that controversial race, the Kentucky Derby, and suffering interference. But what has added even more spice is that the owner of Maximum Security, Gary West, has put up $20 million of his own for a Kentucky Derby rematch involving those horses, War of Will, who won the Preakness, Long Range Toddy and Border Express, to determine once and for all who is the best galloper. If the other owners take them on, they've got to put up $5 million of their own cash. Pat Cummins, great to have a chat to you again. Patty, how are you?
Good morning, fellas. Yeah, great to be with you again.
Is this any chance of occurring?
Yes. Now, with any of these sort of challenges, a lot of things kind of need to go right, and the fine details have to be reviewed. But, you know, Gary West put this out on Friday, about 24 hours before the Preakness Stakes. And I think he might be quivering a little bit behind his challenge now, because one of the horses that he challenged just came back, and arguably the horse that was most affected by the interference in the Kentucky Derby came back and won the Preakness Stakes by about a length on Saturday. So this sets up for a very interesting second half of the racing calendar here in America. And the way in which the challenge is formatted, West has said, if any of these horses, the first time they meet Maximum Security again, sometime in calendar year 2019, he'll put the $5 million up. So it could happen once, twice, three, four different times potentially, or it could happen all in one race. There's a lot of possibilities here, and it's added a lot of intrigue to the racing scene here.
Pat, it's Michael Lynch here. Of course, America provided us one of the greatest match races, the War Admiral Seabiscuit clash in the 1930s. Do you think if this was to come off, it would capture the imagination in the way it did in that for those two Depression-era heroes?
Is it a match race or the next race that comes up that features both horses?
Well, it could be either, to be fair. There really are no machinations on what race, when, where, what or surface, for that matter. But, Michael, I think you raised a very funny point, because when the challenge first came out, and I'm sitting there on Twitter reading it on Friday in the midst of some great racing from Pimlico, I'm sitting there reading it, and I was reading it in the voice of the actor who played Samuel Riddle from the movie Seabiscuit, where he was challenging Seabiscuit to come east and to have a match race against him. That was the voice in my head that I heard. That's what it sounded like to me from nearly 90 years ago, replicated on the big Hollywood screen. And hey, there's a Hollywood element to this. War of Will, again, who's probably the best horse of all of the ones who were affected. War of Will's owner is a man by the name of Gary Barber. Gary, South African by descent, moved to America probably two, three decades ago, And he was the boss at MGM Pictures. Gary has plenty of cash, and he likes to spend it. And he certainly likes to push some through the windows on the tote. So Gary is not one to shy away from a challenge. They've said War of Will is likely to go to the Belmont Stakes. But after that, if this were to kind of unfold in reality, I think July 20th, Monmouth Park in New Jersey, that could be the scene of at least one or two of these horses giving it a go. It's the home of Maximum Security, but it's also where they'll run the Haskell Invitational. And I think that that would be potentially the first spot where we could see someone try to take Mr. West up on his challenge.
I need clarification on the challenge. Is he saying, I'll stump up five, I'll give you $5 million if you beat me?
No, 20
Or is he basically saying, no, it's per horse, per clash, isn't it? Or is he basically saying, you stump up $5 million as well? Or is he basically saying, I'm so confident in my horse, if you beat me, I'll give you $5 million?
No, he's saying that we're going to have a $5 million side bet. You put up five, I'll put up five. And if you guys win, here you go. But if you lose, you owe me. But what it's also said is, if I beat you, if my horse beats yours, I'm going to take your $5 million and donate it to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund.
Yeah.
So there's a charitable component in here as well. Not to completely shoeshine it and say it's all sun and rainbows, there are some kind of questionable elements to this as to how the races would be ridden. If War of Will finished 10th and Maximum Security finished 12th, they're paying out the $5 million. So, other horses are potentially involved in the mix here. It could happen. It's a race within a race, essentially.
Is this going to take
other things that need to be sorted.
Is this going to take a bit of focus off the Belmont, the third leg of the Triple Crown?
Any year where the Derby and Preakness winner is not the same, the luster is off the Belmont Stakes. What it's actually going to make the Belmont Stakes is an incredibly good betting race. They have a maximum field of 16. I would expect a very full field to run in the third leg of America's Triple Crown. But in any year, that takes the luster off. In fact, they came out with the television ratings from the Preakness, the worst in 18 years. Mm. It was also the first time in 23 years that the Derby winner did not have a shot to run in the Preakness.
And Pat, just quickly on what is the latest with Maximum Security and the legal challenge? Is that still proceeding?
Yeah, so there was a federal lawsuit filed. Given the way in which things are adjudicated here, I think there is about a less than 1% chance that there is any recourse given at the federal court level for no particular reason other than they don't like to overturn state laws and state regulations because of the individual sovereignty that those states have over these types of matters. So I don't see the federal courts wanting to get involved. But that said, there is a case, there is a suit that's been filed. I just don't think it's going to go very far.
Pat, great to hear from you again, and hopefully we'll be speaking to you in a few weeks when this race can take part. It would be great to see if Gary West and at least the connections of War of Will take each other on.
Cheers, fellas. Have a good morning.
Pat Cummins live from the States. I love this. That stuff. That's what gets people talking. I'd love to see more of it in Australia. Remember the TAB challenge years ago? I was a kid.
I wasn't, sadly.
Better loosen up and let's elope. Well, I wasn't really a kid. I was a late teenager, maybe early 20s. But I'd love to see something like that again. Two of the Leviathan owners who say, you know what, my horse is better than yours. Let's put our money on the line.
Do you know what? I remember the race and I remember being there and covering it. I think it was a Caulfield, at Caulfield, wasn't it? But
and they were favouring Warriors at the time.
I can't remember who won it.
Let's Elope. And I remember I was hosting Correct Weight years ago, and we had Paul Macon on the line, who owned Starcraft, and we got Lloyd Williams on the line as well, somewhat reluctantly. And Paul Macon was basically goading him into a match race between Starcraft and Reset, which never happened. Just quickly, Sean Kelly has texted through, Lindsay Smith. Lindsay Smith's application for a Victorian trainer's licence, which includes his application to access Darren Weir's former Warrnambool Stables, goes before the RV board for determination at its monthly meeting tomorrow. Licence applications go via the licensing panel for ratification, etc.
So tomorrow. That is good. Thanks to Sean Kelly for clarifying that. Hey, tomorrow, gents, speaking of the Hall of Fame, you must listen in because it was great to see the mighty Vo Rogue inducted in the Hall of Fame. Gary Roberts, one of his part owners, will join me live in the studio for Racing's Open Mic, a Leviathan punter of the day who bought into the Vo late in his career but has got some cracking stories. We'll also have a chat to Cyril Small on the phone as well and relive the great Vo Rogue, one of the true champions of the Australian turf who was inducted into the Hall of Fame. That is on tomorrow's show. Lynchy, great to see you.
Indeed.
You are fading away each and every day.
Not really.
You could fulfil your grandfather's dream and you may ride one day. You may still ride.
No, my Uncle Noel and my Uncle Joe.
I've seen him drive a car. He couldn't ride a horse.
I couldn't. I'm a terrible driver.
Maddie, good to see you. We will read all of your wonderful words up on the RSN website. We'll see you tomorrow. Punters, good luck today if you're having a bet.